Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
It's the end of an era for President Joe Biden and the start of a new one, a second stint in the Oval Office for former and about-to-be President Donald Trump. How did Biden do, and will Trump keep his promises, or will his critics' worst nightmares come true? Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Doug Sovereign, KCBS political reporter. All right, well, here we are on the eve of the inauguration of the 47th president of the United States. And no, it is not the first woman president, the second president of color, the first California Democrat. Instead, it is the oldest person ever to become president, the first ever convicted felon, and only the second man ever to win non-consecutive terms. The first, of course, being good old Grover Cleveland back in the late 19th century, over 130 years ago. Donald John Trump, ascendant once more and about to take office. To break all of this down, a look at Joe Biden's legacy, a look ahead at what we might expect from the second Trump administration. We're joined by two old friends and colleagues, astute observers of the political scene, KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalow, joining us from Washington, D.C., and longtime Bay Area political reporter Carla Marinucci, the senior political writer for many years at the San Francisco Chronicle and then at Politico, where she started the California Playbook. Carla and Mark, thank you so much for being with us on KCBS In-Depth.
Good to be with you, Mark.
Great to be here.
It's a reunion of sorts in that all three of us worked once upon a time covering politics at San Francisco City Hall back in, you know, the 1990s, 80s, 90s, whenever that was, various mayoral administrations. I don't think we would have ever predicted where the country is now and where it may be about to go under Donald Trump. But can we start by looking back for a few minutes at the presidency of Joe Biden? Mark, you've been in Washington for decades now working. The voters made clear they did not consider Joe Biden's presidency a success. But how would you assess it?
He got old. I mean, it's sort of obvious to say that, but I mean, presidencies make young people old, and he started out old. I mean, it put in perspective, more days have passed between today and Joe Biden's birth than Joe Biden's birth and the Civil War. You know, he's an old guy, and it was painfully obvious, even in his goodbye, his farewell address, that, you know, he always had a speech impediment, but he has a huge difficulty communicating. I'm not saying I have no idea about his cognitive abilities, but, you know, if it weren't for that, I mean, the fact is the economy is strong, crime rate is down. He passed some bipartisan bills, spending billions on infrastructure, credits for electric vehicles. He successfully distributed the COVID vaccine, and that crisis is behind us. We ended the war in Afghanistan. There's perhaps a Middle East peace deal about to be brokered, which he was involved in. There's a case that can be made that he had a very, very successful presidency, except his reason for running was to restore the soul of the nation, was to defeat Donald Trump. He succeeded once, but Donald Trump is back, and in that sense, he failed.
What do you think, Carla?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Doug, there's a lot of talk about inflection points. You know, politicians always mention that, but nothing really defines that more than the handoff from Biden to Trump. I mean, Biden leaves with a very clouded legacy, because, look, his approval rating right now is 36%. That's not as low as Trump had during his first term in office. That was 29% he left with. But I think Biden leaves his party in shambles in a lot of ways because of his failure to withdraw from the presidential race. That is going to tarnish his legacy forever. It was a failure to see just how much the American public wanted to hit the eject button on incumbents. I think when it, you know, we have seen in the last few weeks Biden is rushing to try and cement a legacy. He's done a whole bunch of things, from signing 157 executive orders as of last week to, you know, designating monuments in California, clemency to death row inmates, a whole bunch of stuff. But I think he's going to be remembered for a couple of very big items, particularly on the international stage. The Afghanistan withdrawal, which was so chaotic, the war in Gaza, although there's a final, it looks like, settlement, but the fact that many of the people in his own party on the left hesitated to vote for him or vote for Kamala Harris, that is always going to be remembered. And I think the continuation of the Ukraine war is something he's going to have to deal with at home. Immigration and inflation, or were two of the issues that brought him down too. So I think it's a mixed legacy. I think, you know, we saw in his final speech an effort to kind of reach out and warn the American public about what's ahead, an oligarchy taking shape, that Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation. But he also said, you know, the American dream is closer than we think. Well, a lot of Democrats are probably saying, yeah, but you warned us that this guy coming into office is a danger to democracy. And he's been pretty nice to the guy who's a big danger to democracy. And I think that must rankle a lot of Democrats as well.
Well, he's being gracious, as many former presidents are. I guess all of them are outgoing, except with the exception of Trump 4 years ago. But I do think, you know, if you look at his administration, domestically, extraordinary success. I mean, ending a recession, ending a pandemic, the infrastructure bill, Inflation Reduction Act, a gun control. I mean, so many things that normally would be seen as hallmarks of an extraordinary presidency. On the foreign policy front, not so much. But do you think his presidency has been more a failure of, you know, form than content, flash, not substance? Because he got a lot of things done, but didn't get much credit for it and was not good at selling his story the way Donald Trump is.
Here's an easy way to think of it, and I don't want to put either of you on the spot, but you mentioned Grover Cleveland, who mm-hmm. you know, went in office, was defeated, and then went back. Who was the president who was sandwiched between the Cleveland terms?
Well, we know that because we're nerds.
Do you? I have to look it up.
Benjamin Harrison. Wait, what did we
Very
have to
good.
Look it up? Come on, Benjamin Harrison.
Very impressive.
It was Benjamin Harrison, yeah. Not only that, remember that Harrison... There was a popular vote, electoral vote split the first time. Well, not the first time, but the last time it had happened before Gore and Bush with the Harrison-Cleveland election. So that was historic in multiple ways.
You've already shown, you know, more history than Donald Trump, let alone me. But I guess my point was only that when you lose to the person you defeated before, I think by definition it suggests that the public wasn't happy. I mean, like Carla said, his approval rating was down. The economy is strong right now. Crime rate is down. Immigration is actually crossing the borders are below what they were when he took over. That's not what the public sees. The public believes the crime rate is up, and partly we have the candidate in Donald Trump, who has zero problem simply lying about these things. But we also have a media environment now where no one knows exactly what to believe. And if you shut yourself off and only look at certain sorts of news, I mean, I was stunned on my, for some reason, I get texts from Donald Trump. he brokered this agreement in the Middle East. He announced it. I got a tweet from him or a text the other day saying, you know, you're mm-hmm. welcome. I did this great
thing.
It's
Thank
like,
you.
What are you
You're
talking
welcome,
about?
Right.
You're not even president yet. But I'm certain that there are millions of people who believe that this was Donald Trump.
No, it is true, though. His team was involved because the Biden team wanted to make sure it would be sustained into the next. So his envoys were there, but yes.
But I think you know, Mark is pointing out something that is a key issue for the Biden administration, and that was his messaging. He mm-hmm. even said in an interview last week that when it came to the American Rescue Plan, which is one of the hallmarks of his administration, one of the things he could really brag about, that was that $1.9 trillion stimulus package.
Right.
He didn't sign the checks that went out to Americans. Donald Trump did sign those checks. He didn't put out there exactly what he did. And as Mark said, his many decades in office kind of weighed him down in the sense of the way a public communicates, the way they consume news, is totally different than when he first entered politics. And he has never changed that kind of style. Not to say that he should adopt the Trump style, which is a lot of misinformation in many cases, but the fact is that Biden was still working with old tools in many cases, and that was one of the reasons why I think a lot of voters didn't understand what he was doing for the economy and or a lot of the key accomplishments of his administration. As you mentioned, the Infrastructure Act, the CHIPS and Science Act, there were many things he could have bragged about and could have explained to people and didn't do it well.
So let's hope bluster and hyperbole and lying does not become the new norm, but we're about to go back into it because now Joe Biden gives way to the second coming of Donald Trump. Let's begin with the news that the inauguration is being moved indoors. It's supposed to be very cold. Mark, you're in Washington. I guess the deep freeze is coming by Inauguration Day. That hasn't been done since Ronald Reagan. I remember covering Barack Obama's inauguration and froze every part of my body off. I guess this one's going to be colder. Do we buy that this is a concern for the well-being of the people coming, or do you think this is more about the optics and he doesn't want to have a small crowd and people leaving early because it's cold and all of that?
I mean, the weather forecast is supposed to get down to something like 7 degrees with wind chills below zero. So, yeah, it is understandable. It's being moved indoors. It seems reasonable. Yeah, let me tell you something, though, that it avoids this problem. But let me tell you a quick story about I teach college students out here, University of California students who come out here for a term. I had a couple students come up to me after class yesterday or a couple days ago, and it broke my heart. These students wanted to go see history being made. They're not Trump supporters. They want to go to the mall and see history be made.
Right.
It came up to me, both immigrants, and asked me whether I thought they'd be safe there. It killed me because I told them, yeah, of course they'll be safe. And then suddenly I had to stop and say, well, wait a second. It's easy for me to say that. These are two people, they look like they're from South America. One's from Mexico, one is from South America. And it's horrifying that in 2025, we have to actually think whether or not somebody whose skin is a little different might be safe on the fringes of an inauguration. It just, and the chances are, and what I said to them is, of course you'll be safe, but had you asked me 4 years ago, is it safe for me to go down and watch Congress, count the votes, the electoral votes on January 6th? I would say, of course it's safe. What are you talking about?
Well,
And it wouldn't.
I was going to say, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mark, but here's another, I think, issue with moving this inside. The average folks, like you described, Mark, are not going to be able to watch this historic event. But sitting on the dais with Trump will be three of the richest men on the planet, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and Jeff Bezos, as well as one of the 12 cabinet members who are also billionaires. The average folks are going to get cut out of the picture on this one. And I'm not sure that that's a good optics for Trump as he goes into this administration.
So they're going to open up the basketball arena where the
Where the Wizards
Wizards
play.
play, and Trump says he's going to show up there. It won't be the same. But one person who, Carla, will not be on stage watching it for the first time ever, or since she's been elected, is Nancy Pelosi, which is surprising because Nancy Pelosi is a creature of protocol, and she always said when Donald Trump or George W. Bush or whoever she didn't like as president walks in, say State of the Union, you're cheering the office. You're not cheering the man. She hasn't said exactly why she's not coming. I suspect it has as much to do with the fact that she broke her hip and
Right,
had
she
to
had a
have
hip
hip replacement
replacement. Yeah.
surgery. And that certainly doesn't fit with 7 degree weather in Washington. But it's the first one that she will have skipped, and people will read a lot into that.
But
So,
also not coming is the newest member of the congressional delegation here in the Bay Area, Latifah Simon, who said she's not going to attend the inauguration either. So there's a number of Democrats, well, including Michelle Obama, most obviously, who aren't going to be there. And I think they kind of remember how Trump, didn't open the doors for Biden, didn't assist the transition in any way. Going back 4 years ago. And so
But these are
I
very
so.
moving. I mean, you've been to these, Carla, and Doug, you've been to these. I have to say that of all the pomp and circumstance in Washington, I find inaugurations the single most moving ceremony. When the first time when I saw George W. Bush take over from Clinton, Bill Clinton is the most powerful person in the world. Everyone reveres him, and suddenly they swear on a Bible, a few words are said, and suddenly, congratulations, Mr. President. It's a different party. It's a different person. It is a remarkable display of peaceful transition of power. And that's why you're going to see a lot of Democrats there. They're honoring the tradition of this, certainly not the new president.
Sure, well said, Mark. Now that makes it easier for people to boycott when it's moved indoors and there's less room, et cetera. But Trump will become president on Monday, and they'll have the inaugural balls and the parade, et cetera. And by late afternoon, he'll be sitting at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office with the power of the pen and the paper, having promised dozens of executive orders, not all things he can actually do by executive action on the first day. But he has promised to do so much on day one. How much can he really do, and what do you actually expect him to do? I mean, a lot of things he wants to do, he can't do unilaterally, or he can try, but it'll go to court, Congress will fight it, whatever it is. Mark, what do you think he's actually going to try to pull off right away?
There's talk that he may actually have some of those executive orders brought up to the Capitol. So he doesn't have to wait to get behind the Resolute desk. Seriously, that he might just sign those things within minutes of being sworn in.
He
I mean,
could.
some of the things are very easy. For example, Joe Biden, the minute he was sworn in, re-signed the United States up with the Paris Climate Accords
Right.
and joined this climate battle. Trump can take us out of that unilaterally. He can do that without asking anybody. He says he'll begin the mass deportations, and there are rumors already in Washington that starting Monday afternoon, there are going to be some immigration raids. I don't know whether that's going to happen. I don't see how you pull together that quickly. You're right. I guess it was Axios, the journalism site, that counted. I think it was 59 things he promised to do on day one. But he's already behind the ball. He said that before he gets sworn in, he'd have the war in Ukraine ended. He can do that. First, he said 24 hours. Then he said, no, before I'm sworn in, I will have that war ended. And the clock is still ticking, but as far as I know, the war's not over.
I mean, when you talk about some of the issues, as Mark said, there's been more than 60 of them that he's promised, including the mass deportations, ending birthright citizenship, a national emergency declaration, imposing tariffs. I mean, and some of these are doable, but I think the border is a big one for Republicans. That is a that's sort of a line in the sand for a lot of them. I think you might see him go on that. Expanding energy production, drill baby drill, he kept saying throughout his campaign that was going to be one of the first things he does. So I think right now, I mean, from the minute he puts his hand on that Bible, and you're right, Mark, Stephen Miller and his administration has said that is the moment when deportations are going to begin. He's going to be judged now on what happens next. He's a lame duck president starting at that moment, and it may be all downhill from here. I mean, he owns it, his party owns it in Washington. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to deliver and to keep those poll numbers where they are right now. And by the way, right now his poll numbers aren't much better than Joe Biden's in terms of approval ratings. He's underwater in approval disapproval with voters.
And they're only going to go down as people tend to once they actually the honeymoon is over. A couple of those things. I mean, birthright citizenship, he cannot, with an executive order, end the right of people born in the United States to be American. That would take a constitutional amendment. He can declare a national state of emergency and use that for various functions and, law enforcement purposes. I don't. They're not going to close the border. He might tighten things at the border, but a lot of the things he has said or hyperbolic and can't actually be done or won't be done. And the deportation thing, they're talking about millions of people. And as you say, Mark, that's not something you can snap your fingers and do. That takes a lot of law enforcement
Well, on the
plan and
birthright
operation.
system, we forget this about Trump. I mean, you're absolutely right. It's in the Constitution, and it would require an amendment. Most people believe. There are lawyers out there who say that that was intended not for immigrants who have kids here. That was intended for, slaves after the Civil War. And he has lawyers telling him that he can do that by executive order. And that sounds crazy to people. But he also had lawyers telling him that Mike Pence could overturn the results of the
Right.
election 4 years ago,
He
and
can
he
find a
might
lawyer who will
back.
tell him anything, as we've learned.
And he's got a Supreme Court now. I mean, I heard somebody put it this way, and I think it's a decent analysis. He campaigned on the idea that he was going to be crazier or wilder than he was the first term. He said that over and over again, and the Supreme Court has now given him a blank check to do much, much more than he did in the first term because they've
Right.
expanded presidential powers. The combination makes it very, very difficult for anybody to predict how far he will go and what he'll get away with.
I think a lot of the scrutiny will go on the January 6th pardons. That is the one that He has spoken so much about Democrats are going to be watching if some of those pardons go to people who are, you know, guilty of violent actions against some police officers in D.C. So I think that's a key one. But I also think one of the ones we may see is against the trans rights. You know, mm-hmm. he has said he has intended to ban trans individuals from serving in the military or serving on women's sports teams. And since that has been sort of an issue, a fiery issue for both sides of the aisle, and that one would fire up his base, you might be able to watch that one signed on Monday.
I want to remind listeners, this is KCBS In Depth. I'm KCBS political reporter Doug Sovereign. I'm joined by Mark Sandalow and Carla Marinucci. Mark in Washington, Carla here in the Bay Area. You know, one of the main reasons he won this election is because of how people feel about the economy and inflation, which continues. It hasn't, you know, gone up much from it's come down and it's held relatively steady of late. But a lot of economists think it's going to go up in 2025. How long a honeymoon does he get when people aren't suddenly receiving free eggs and cheap bacon, when milk isn't suddenly half what it was a few weeks before? Before people say, wait a second, I thought Trump was going to lower prices. And he's even admitted, well, maybe it's not as easy as I thought.
I mean, I think when, especially since he has appeared to turn his attention to things like acquiring Greenland and turning Canada into the 51st state, people may lose patience. The price of eggs has been sort of the bottom line here for a lot of people. I think if those prices don't come down or those tariffs start going in and affecting prices, you're already seeing people buying refrigerators, appliances, cars this month because they're afraid of the tariffs bumping up the prices. He could quickly lose some of that thrust he's had in terms of the polls. So I think that's something to watch.
But he still does have this sort of hypnotic trance on a good part of the public. I mean, you know, don't forget, even San Francisco voted for him in higher proportion than any Republicans. I think it was George W. Bush in 2000. I mean, you know, his vote went up everywhere. And, you know, a lot of this stuff, I mean, Doug, you make a very good point that the facts are going to get in the way of this. But people are going to say, ah, that's fake news. You know, it's like, yeah, I heard Doug Sovereign say on KCBS that inflation's on the way up now. Do you believe that? No. People are going to define this by what party they're part of. It's a real problem with the media landscape right now that even if facts don't work in his honor, he's so good. He's so good at manipulating the media that yeah. I think that in some ways it may take the public a while to figure it out.
I think
you know,
I
human. Well, I was going to say, Carla, you mentioned how he's a lame duck from, you know, 1201 on Monday. He's a lame duck. Assuming that there's not some sort of fight on his part to get a third term or whatever, suspend the Constitution, the 2028 presidential campaign will start, you know, in 2026. And so he really only has about a year, maybe 18 months before the torch starts to pass to J.D. Vance. Vance will have to launch for 28. People will start running. What kind of pressure does that put on him? And do you think that's what we're going to see, a movement to move Vance into the spotlight? I mean, Donald Trump does not like to share the spotlight. But within a year, you're 2026. It's time to run for 28.
I think Vance or Marco Rubio, who is going to be Secretary of State, and by the way, whose confirmation hearing suggests Democrats are much more comfortable with him so I think he may be one to watch in the Republican Party as well. You are seeing Democrats already sort of starting to line up and do their thing on social media, Gavin Newsom being one of them. But I mean, there is a very short window, I think, before Trump has to, look at the people coming behind him. And I think he has to keep watching Elon Musk, who is the most powerful guy in media. When you're talking about misinformation, Mark, he's the major domo of the whole thing.
There
and
is.
The reasons why the landscape has changed and one of the reasons why Trump cannot afford to anger him. So, I mean, for all of those reasons, Trump has to be looking over his shoulder at what's ahead and what's behind him when it comes to...
This is a guy, though, who is solely focused on his legacy. He could care less, it certainly seems to me, about who succeeds him, unless it helps him. I mean, this is a guy, remember, who up until the day Jimmy Carter died, insisted Jimmy Carter's the happiest man alive right now because he used to be the worst president, but now Joe Biden's even worse than he is. It's a sick way of thinking, but that's how Donald Trump thinks. And if he thinks that Marco Rubio or, his vice president's going to outshine him? No, 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 no. He'd rather see them fail than that. It seems to me that he will do whatever he can to keep himself in the limelight. It's going to be a fascinating period in Washington, and not necessarily a great one, but fascinating nonetheless.
Well, the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. We every few years we say, oh, things will get back to normal now. There has been no normal for really this century, this millennium. Our politics have been so topsy-turvy and crazy, and this is, the way of the world, right? I mean, one
Right.
thing happens, another thing happens, and something you never would have expected. And here we are with Donald Trump, a billionaire, media figure, multi-times bankrupt, convicted of felonies. The man is back in the White House as of Monday. It's hard to believe. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye that you want to share about either looking back on Biden or ahead to Trump, Carla?
I just think now's the time to watch how Democrats retool or recover from what has been the biggest political losses in modern times. And I think you're going to see I think a new generation of them, and you're already seeing that. They're going to have to come forward and somehow tweak their message and somehow retool their outreach to the American voters. And that is going to be very interesting to watch. I think with Trump, it's going to be interesting to watch his continued relationship with Silicon Valley, where the whole Doge thing goes with Elon Musk and Vivek, and things like disaster relief here in California. When you're talking about them putting conditions on it, that could foretell a very dark period for California. And I think those are things to watch as we go through the next couple of weeks or months with the Trump administration.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that a bit, but we've run out of time to do so. Mark, any last words you want to share?
Only that I assumed for years that Donald Trump would be a blip in history, that he wouldn't win the election. When he won the election, fine, 4 years and he's out. He's about to be sworn in for another 4 years. This is not a blip in history. This is a major chapter of American history, and it's a little hard to know exactly what it's going to do for us.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mark. I think many people thought after the way his first term ended, okay, he's done. We're past that now. Let's move on, especially after January 6th and all the indictments and criminal cases. And now here we are. The man is back in power with scores to settle and the weapons to do it at his disposal. And we're just going to have to see what the next 4 years hold. Well, really appreciate you both taking the time to do this. Thank you to KCBS political analyst Mark Sandolo and political analyst Carla Marinucci, formerly of Politico and The Chronicle. You can find this episode and past episodes of In Depth online at kcbsradio.com. Just go to the podcast tab and look for In Depth. You can also hear In Depth on the Odyssey app anytime you like. Download the app on your smartphone, favorite KCBS radio. Thank you for listening. For KCBS In Depth, I'm Doug Sovereign.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.